ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
I'm your other host, Biowolf.
And tonight we are back with another fine episode of Hunt the Truth, which, again, I just don't know how it keeps on getting so much freaking better. I don't know how they do it. I just don't. But we have Godzilla Magnesium.
I'm not sure how for the night.
Okay. There's something that I don't quite get as a reference, but anyways,
that's fine. I'm not referencing anything.
Okay.
Came to mind.
All right. Fair enough. We have Mr. Godzilla T and Mr. Turbo Freak back in the house tonight for our Hunt the Truth coverage. Welcome, guys.
Thank you. It's always fun to be here.
Yep. Took the words right out of my mouth.
There you go. Is it possible to give words back?
I don't know. We're going to find out.
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I want to be a part of this anymore.
That's it. Podcast off.
I'm a little scared now. Why? Cruel world, why?
We could come up with new and creative ones.
You just... Okay. moving on. I'm a little lost and confused now.
That's fine. Everybody's confused.
Yeah.
That's me every day.
Well, that's a problem. Or, I don't know. Maybe it works for you. Maybe being confused is just the norm.
Yeah, probably.
Anyways, tonight we're going to be talking about the second to last episode of Hunt the Truth. We got a big development here for this one, and I can only assume that the last episode, given the current trend of all the episodes, is going to be a giant monster of a podcast.
Yeah.
Probably.
I don't know how we're going to survive, because that's going to be the day before the Microsoft press briefing, before E3. We're going to be just running around like chickens with our heads cut off, trying to cover E3 and then trying to do this podcast. And we're going to have an interesting week.
Yeah. I mean,
I hope you get some good sleep this weekend, because we're going to be so busy.
That's the problem. I don't sleep as it is.
Prepare to sleep less.
Sleep, it's overrated.
Yeah. A little bit.
I like my sleep. I don't know what you're talking about.
Coming from the guy that took a nap when he got home tonight. Unintentionally.
I wish I could take a nap. I don't take naps.
Well, that it wasn't like a personal problem so much as I took one. Because I sat down to watch TV for a little bit. Next thing I woke up and it was 6 o'clock.
There you go.
Oh. Yeah. Wow, all right.
Hey, but anyway.
The body needs what the body needs, right?
I'll sleep when I'm dead.
I don't think you're technically sleeping
sleep
at that
when you're
point.
You're dead, Marine.
Yeah, right. So let's go ahead and move into this week's episode of Hunt the Truth. If you can recall from last time, Ben got a lead from Petra of a undisclosed location with a coordinates and a time window for him to go check out, saying that it was from someone she trusted a lot and that this was something that he should really, 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 really follow up on. But after seeing his apartment completely torn, floorboards, all furniture, all fixtures, everything just completely gone and gutted, he was pretty much done at that point. He didn't want to do anything else. He was done chasing after Oni. He was done chasing the story. He just was done, period.
I don't blame him. You walk into your former home and the floor's not even there.
Right.
It's kind of disconcerting.
It's been violated as thoroughly as possible. I don't mean that in a joking way. That's just, as I knew that would come off as a joke like halfway through starting, but I don't mean that as a joke at all. It's like
too late.
Yeah.
I so imagine seeing that though. Literally walking into your house, your apartment, and there's nothing there. Like everything is just completely gone. Like that's an unnerving feeling. That's an eerie feeling. Like I've been in that situation before. In one of our old houses when a hurricane came through. I mean, granted, there's nothing in there. It was just an extra house that we were, you know, renovating. But there was nothing left. Like, there was the stilts, like the actual beams, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of that in tornado damage, too. It's the same thing. Your house was there, and now it's gone.
Yep.
And something like that is a part of you.
It's a really... Yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
It's a very humbling sight to... You know, granted, this is a little different than, you know, a natural disaster, but still, to come home and find your home not there. I mean, yeah, Ben's, the structure is still there, but his home is gone. That would just crush anybody.
That it right. would.
And you identify with that stuff too, because that's your home. That's the place where you feel the most comfortable, and to have that violated, completely stripped, and seeing that Oni was trying to completely erase any trace of him ever existing, that's very disheartening. When you go back to something like that, you just feel completely helpless and useless. And what do you plan on doing after that? You have no money. His accounts were all frozen. His stash that he had at his apartment is now gone. Everything is just your whole identity of who you are, from the value that you put in the stuff that you own. That kind of makes you appreciate the stuff that you have when you lose all that too.
When he said in the last episode, when they revealed that, I started thinking, God, I can't even imagine what that would be like to go up to my room one day and just see nothing there.
It's very, very, I don't know. It's someone, Bio would be the best person to really relate to it, I guess, with your past experience. But I've never been in that situation. I'm guessing Godzilla and Isaac, neither of you have been in that situation either.
I've never been to that extent, but we've had some scares over the years.
Mm-hmm.
We, back when I was younger, our house literally caught on fire. Mm-hmm. And, we had that threat of losing our home, and it's very scary. Because I was, I was younger at the time, and of course, you get woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning to find out that, your house is almost gone or is on fire. Nothing like sitting out in the car in your underwear.
Yeah,
I guess
it's a really unnerving feeling. I mean, my friends actually lost their house due to a fire, and their house was nothing but cedar and cypress.
Ooh.
And the core of that blaze, they said, would hit 2,000 degrees.
Easily. So they
I can kind of relate. Like Dust was saying, like I've been through several incidences where homes have been just gone. But I can honestly relate to that situation, and it's not good. It really isn't. I mean. It's different though, because everybody ransacked the house. Like everything was gone because they went through everything. Like that's a kind of a different situation, but the fact that they literally tore everything apart just to find everything is just a little crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Ben's going through. You have to assume that being stripped of everything you own, literally, he had nothing left. Whatever he had back had his little safe house. Was probably the only things he had left. He had no money. He had no more clothes because his apartment was completely gutted.
Mm.
It's just, yeah. You can't really explain it further than that. It's just one of those situations. And to hear him say that, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. It makes total sense.
Yeah, I mean, he basically just gave up his last hope of anything. When you go in there and you see everything that you've owned, everything that you've cherished, pictures, like I'm sure there's stuff in there that they didn't describe, such as like pictures of his family or, memorabilia things, like giving him his child, like just different things like that, things that kind of mean more than just material items themselves.
Right.
Like I'm sure when he found out that was gone, that was more heart wrenching than anything he's been through so far. I mean, he's been through enough stress as it is. Yeah, sure. But once you find everything that you like hold dear is completely gone, that's
right.
That's a really sickening feeling.
Yeah. To that point, though, once he was kind of just there, he settled in and just was making it through however best he could, because it was nighttime and he just tried to snuggle up in his hoodie and just kind of wait out until the next day. Because at that point, what do you plan on doing? He doesn't really have anywhere that he wants to go.
Nowhere he can go, nowhere he wants to go, just done.
Right.
Yep.
So in the middle of the night, as he was trying to get some sleep, he got a phone call on his data pad, and of all the people, it's Pharaoh that manages to hit him up, and she warns Ben that he needs to get out of there ASAP because Oni found him. And I was thinking all at the end of the last episode, don't go in there. It's a trap. Do not go in there. And you know Oni's putting up monitoring stuff. If anyone sets a foot in that apartment complex, they know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm surprised that he went in.
I'm surprised it took them so long to get there.
So I would assume that they would think that he's on his own. He's not going to be like trying to draw as much attention to himself if he was smart, which I think going into the building wasn't a smart thing to do in the first place. But they're controlling all inbound, outbound flights for the most part. They're not going to be, or if they see something, then they're going to shut down everything and they're going to hone in on his location. Like, I don't know how far away the nearest spaceport was or where the nearest Oni office on his planet was, but it doesn't seem too far-fetched to think that there was a couple of hours before they got there. But it does kind of beg the question, why did it take them a couple hours versus, or however many hours it was between the last episode and this one?
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem too odd to me, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I mostly mean that sarcastically. It's like, took you a while, guys, a while to get there. All that monitoring equipment.
He just sits there and be all sassy. It's like, took you guys long enough.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah.
Have like some master plan to just take them all out when he gets there.
I've been waiting for you. And just takes out like a shotgun and blows them all away.
Well, you would think if, with how many other apartments were in his complex, there might have been one or two of those other residents that had guns. And from what he said in the last episode, everything was just draped and covered. It didn't seem like those were touched at all compared to his place, which was completely stripped. So you go fishing around in the other apartments, you come set up a trap for whoever decides to come by. There you go.
Yeah. But at that point, like as we said, it's like I don't think he was, you know, in that kind of mood. He was
right.
He was, as we said, he was done just with everything.
He's not screwed up in the head to that point where he would think of something like that.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, as we go forward, because we see like when Pharaoh does say, hey, you know, you got Oni agents coming. Initially, he's kind of hesitant to do anything and starts, you know, saying, well, why should I trust you? How can I trust you? I don't know you at all. It's only like, one, you know, he's kind of in that ultimate state of denial. And it's only once he hears, you know, the evidence of the Oni agents outside that he suddenly snaps back to reality and thinks, I should probably get out of here.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you got to look at it like this, too. I mean, he knows Pharaoh is doing all this stuff to for the greater good, basically, to take down Oni. But you got to look at it like this, too. Everything that he's been going through is because of her doing. Because of everything that she's done. Everything that she's been putting out on the internet.
Right.
Yeah, I'm still thinking she's got an ulterior motive.
Yeah. Like, for the longest time, I thought she might be Ilsa Zane from Halo Initiation, but at this point, whilst I'm sure she's still got her own motives, I don't think that's, you know, that's her anymore. I don't think she is Ilsa at this point. But she does seem to genuinely care for Ben to some degree, which I don't think Ilsa Zane is capable of.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I don't think that Ilsa has those emotions anymore.
Yeah.
Especially after going something like the Spartan program.
The super Spartan program, apparently.
Yeah.
Spartans that don't need Mjolnir. God.
Well,
that seems weird.
You know, they have physical unnatural enhancements.
Yeah.
You know, which help them cope with the armor.
Yeah.
So
if you want a little more info on that, I don't know if you want to like talk to that more or, but you did a nice little kind of talk about it on your latest video. On why you think it's not her, but
it's kind of going. Yeah, essentially, it just goes into she's bat crap insane, and I don't know if she's got the capacity to, you know, genuinely care for someone, or even I don't know if she might be able to feign that, because psychopaths are certainly certainly shown themselves to be capable of feigning emotion, but I don't know if she would. But, you know, on the other hand, we don't know anything about her other than that very, very brief appearance in Initiation.
Right. Something that you were getting to, you're a Godzilla, I forgot which one you said just a minute ago, but it other than the ulterior motive thing, I don't it doesn't really seem like with her later on willing to sacrifice her life to take Oni down, that there's not, that doesn't seem like the characteristic of someone with an ulterior motive. She seems pretty convicted of taking down Oni is the right thing to do for humanity.
Mm-hmm. Well, she could have a personal vendetta against Oni. You know, they killed her best friend or something like that, you know, and this is just a means to get that revenge.
I suppose so.
Yeah. I mean, generally, I think her emotion, she sounded very genuine, which is one reason I don't, which kind of feeds into that. I don't believe that she's Elsa Zane, but I think that she might have been possibly been aware that Ben might have had some kind of lead given his connection to Petra. Which I would not doubt that she might know about that. Pharaoh could know about that. So it's hard to say, but I think there might be more to her than meets the eye, but yeah, it's really hard to say at this point.
Given that her character has been shrouded in mystery for a while, that it leads to say that there is a lot that we don't know about her.
Yeah.
And I think for the most part, I would hesitate to say this, but I don't think this podcast is necessarily going to be the end of her unless the super long podcast we're rumored to be getting at the next week's episode is really all inclusive of the end, like wrapping up everything for this. I think we may see some more influence of that in the games or in the TV show or other parts of the Halo fiction, like maybe some of the books from later this year.
I definitely agree. We are not done with Pharaoh.
Now, she's done too much to put so much out there in order for her not to be.
But look what happened to Mashaak.
No.
Yeah.
I miss Mashaak.
I think we pretty much all miss Mashaak.
Yeah.
If Grim is at E3, I'm going to ask him what happened to Mashaak. Because I want to know. I so want to know. I miss Mashaak. He was so great. Going back off tangent, because we've derailed so many times already. Although, all good stuff. After Pharaoh's urging Ben to get out, he's sticking his ground until he actually hears the Oni agents walking up to his apartment. And then he starts freaking the hell out. So he runs out of his apartment. He tries to go run into another room, realizes that he's making a bunch of noise, stepping over all the plastic sheets. So he backtracks out into a hallway, finds another room, hunkers down. Then he hears the Oni agents come in and go into his apartment. They start looking around. They start trying to rummage through all the stuff, making sure that he's not there. And during that, Ben is trying to make sure that he didn't, or going through his head, did I leave any evidence behind that I was there? Do they know? Which, at this point, the reason that they're there is because they know he's there. So
you can even hear a couple points in the episode that they're like, you can hear in the background, he's here. They're whispering.
Right. So they know at some point that Ben has been there. And Ben was also saying in the podcast, do they have like thermal monitoring stuff where they could see him? Heart rate sensors or anything else that would help pinpoint him out in the whole building that wouldn't have anyone else in there. So he found a moment where he thought he could break away, and he ran out of the room that he was in, went to find another room, and he heard the Oni guys trying to come and figure out where he was. So he hunkered down for a little bit, and after a few seconds where he thought that he was clear because he didn't hear anything, that's when the Oni operatives jumped him and tried to stun him and beat him down. After a little bit of a struggle, he hears a few gunshots and the Oni operatives go down. And he's kind of there cowering in the corner. Here's one that's still alive. One more gunshot and they're both dead. And guess who that was?
Santa Claus.
The purple people eaters. Oh.
Yeah, 1, 4, 5 purple people eaters.
Sasquatch? All right, Bio, your turn.
I don't know.
Lock your sponsor.
Put it on me.
Lock your monster.
Well, we all gave one. We all gave one. It was your
Ben
turn.
Ben looked up at the Loch Ness Monster and he said, can I have a battery fitting?
I don't know. The skunk ape? I don't know.
You could have done the chupacabra.
Yeah, that's...
You've been thinking about that.
There you go.
Mm.
Tell you, it looks like a walrus. Didn't I tell you, stop making up animals? By the way, RVB season 13 is coming up pretty soon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I need to catch up on season 12.
Me too.
Yep.
Talking about series, back to Hunt the Truth.
But I want to point something out, though. When I was listening to it at work, I listened to this actually several times. I had the headphones blazing. When I heard those gunshots, like, that was a little spine, like, that was crazy, because, like, I was listening to it, like, it was off-putting. I honestly thought they were honestly going to take him. Like, I didn't think that there was going to be any interference with anybody. That was really cool.
I think it was really, really neat how they did that. And to show that Pharaoh was keeping to her promise that they would protect him was even more cool. It's like, wow, that's pretty awesome to see that she was there in person to ensure his safety. That just means that she's genuinely after her plan of stopping Oni. Like, she believes in what he's done, and she's super appreciative of everything that he's done for her and for exposing Oni, trying to bring them down and everything.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty awesome. I really like how they molded that together for this part of the story. And really, this is some of the best storytelling that 343 has put out since they've taken over the Halo franchise. For real.
It's definitely up there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are going to say that's not really storytelling because it's different. I've come across a couple of people saying they're not telling a story. I said, well, what do you call it then? Like, this is audio logs or whatever. But anyway,
they're completely telling a story through this.
Yeah, but apparently some people say otherwise. But anyway,
that's weird.
That is very weird.
Very. But
that's weird. They're weird.
It's very, very weird.
But no, I think this is probably the best storytelling they have put out in anything. Like, I'm sorry. Compared to like Halo 4 or anything like that, like, I think this is pretty up there.
Oh yeah,
like, and not to mention quality. Like, they've put—I've said it over and over and over and over again—but like, the amount of sound effects and the amount of time they put into doing it's like, I know for like, I know a lot of voice acting stuff. I know they're acting in there. Like, you can hear it. Like, when they're running, when Ben's getting tackled and doing all these different things, they're acting. So there's a lot of stuff put into this podcast.
Right.
I hate calling it a podcast, too. Like, I know that's what it's called, but it's more audio log than anything else.
Yeah. I've been calling it an audio drama.
Yeah.
Right. It's one of those things that we just look at everything that we've come up with, and it's kind of a follow-on to the human side of the story, which I think is one of the reasons why it's so good, is because it's something that we can relate to. We know the struggles of, like, human struggle has always been a thing of having organizations with power and then having the little man try to come up and really fight that power. So it's something that a lot of people can relate to. And I think that's one of the reasons why exploring this insurrectionist and UNSC and Oni story again, kind of bringing this back up after the War with the Covenant is gone, I think it's very applicable. I think it's very logical in terms of how the universe will grow, and I think it's a great platform to push the franchise ahead, because we've had this series of games that's been all around this mysterious foreigner object, what it does, and then the Covenant War coming in, but that's gone. So, I mean, after that, what are you going to go to? And as we've seen through the podcast, been explained, you're going to go back to the old ways before the war, and to see this dichotomy between the Inner Colonies and the UEG and the other colonies wanting to be on their own, I think that's just an awesome story to explore. And I think that's where Halo is going to be going from here on out. It's going to be exploring that interhuman struggle. And then we obviously have the factions of the Covenant that are still against humanity and think that they need to be cleansed and all that stuff. So you have these different angles that create this nice complex picture for the Halo franchise.
Oh, yeah. Like, they've been teasing it, and some of the books showed that human conflict rising back up, but Hunt the Truth certainly is like taking the cake as far as bringing the insurrection back to the forefront of Halo's lore.
Yep.
especially with the new Colonial Alliance. Like, my biggest disappointment with some of the recent stories is that they introduced these guys again in Halo Initiation, and they showed up for a couple issues, but then they never did anything with them. And it was all the United Rebel Front again, you know, which is a bit more of an older one, insurrectionist mm-hmm. movement. So
do you think that Sapient Sunrise is part of this?
Part of the NCA?
Yes. I think so.
I would have trouble because they're definitely not part of the NCA, because the NCA has worked with Sangheili before. So that would go in very counter to Sapient Sunrise's motives and goals and whatnot.
I just find it interesting that they were mentioned once. Well, several times in the last podcast or whatever. And then now it's like we don't hear anything from them at all. Like, they're just gone. Like, I mean, granted, like, Ben's in a whole different, you know, setting now. He's not around, like, a computer or TV or anything like that, so you're not going to really hear anything much from it. But it just makes me wonder how much they're going to be influenced in the last episode. Like, how much they're actually going to be. Because there's a Twitter account made for it. You know what I mean?
Like, Sapient Sunrise?
Yeah. Like, there's got to be more to them than what we're seeing.
Yeah. I think I'm still on board that we might see them in Halo 5, you know, maybe very briefly, but you know, that's what it seems like they're setting up for, is this, you know, Sapient Sun. If we're going to fight some humans in Halo 5, if briefly, and Sapient Sunrise may make up a part of that.
I think we could see them in future publications for Halo, other literature. Maybe we get a glimpse of it in the TV show or something else, but
that would be a great thing. Yeah, if they showed up, they'd be great for the TV show.
They haven't really been that active, though. I know they made another tweet yesterday with a new poster, but other than that initial blast, it hasn't really held that much attention from people.
Yeah, I think it's just supposed. I think it's like right now, it's just part of the marketing. You know, the marketing for the marketing. That's weird.
Well, I mean, that's part of what it is, right?
Yeah.
So you take that, and you take some of the other stuff that's in here. I think there's a good portion of what we see in Hunt the Truth that's going to be transitioning over to either the games or some of the other literature. Because we have three more books coming out this year. Four more books coming out this year. Four.
Yeah, there's a lot of... Well, one of them comes out next month, if I'm remembering correctly, right?
Actually, one comes out in... See if it's Wednesday, 6 days.
Okay.
Tuesday is right in time for E3 Hunters in the Dark with Olympia Vale.
Yeah, it might be a little while before I read that one.
I'm gonna do my best to try and power through that.
Let's know how that goes. I'll be so filled up to my head with E3 stuff that it'll probably be a couple of weeks before I can even start reading that one.
Like I said, try. Depends on... Thank God it's not coming out on Monday.
I still need to finish Broken Circle. I need to get that book done. I've started reading it. I've gotten halfway through on one of my attempts, and then I just get busy with stuff. So maybe during the flights out to E3, or maybe on the way back, I might be able to squeeze it in. We'll see.
I don't...
It's not that long of a book.
You got a plane ride, Dust.
It takes me a while to read, dude.
Audiobook it.
I can't do audiobooks.
Oh, wow.
He doesn't like audiobooks.
They just don't work for me.
Mm.
It's easier for me to remember stuff if I actually read it.
See, I'm weird because I read the book as I'm listening to it. Like, I'll get more information out of that way. Like, so like when I'm on the plane...
That actually makes a lot of sense because you're getting two sensory inputs, so you have the potential to absorb more information and retain that better.
Yeah.
You know, we say repetition helps, so by taking it in two ways at the same time, super memory.
I can understand how that works really well.
Yeah, it's you're more immersed into it. Like, you don't have things surrounding you, like noises or, you know, TV or anything like that. So, like, you're concentrated on the book, and you're also concentrated listening. So you're getting both things, so it's going to help out a lot.
Mm.
Very cool. All right, moving back to the story. It's going to take us so long to get through this. We haven't even scratched the surface. We've gotten through like the first 3 minutes of the podcast, and it's a 20-minute podcast. We're going to have to storm through the rest of this. Gosh.
All right. Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. So as we get Pharaoh helping out Ben in the apartment, she basically tells him, we need to get out of here. She picks up all the data pads and all the equipment off of the Oni operatives to leave kind of no digital trace behind. And they find the fire escape. They get out that way, and they're running around. And when they finally have a place to settle down, Ben's like, what's going on? And she tells him to basically shut up. This is what I need you to do. And she tells Ben that they probably greenlit him now if they got a chance to notify Oni at some point. So they know that he's alive and that he's still out there. And that everything is not going quite as well as they thought. Turns out that his little hack and his little testimony wasn't quite bought off by the senators, which gave Oni some time to recover from his little incident, which does not put Pharaoh and her group of people in the best spot. So they're actually going to go off and try to finish Oni once and for all, while they're still kind of vulnerable. She gives him a data pad that is completely untraceable, with access to funds for him and with safe house locations that he can get into and that he'll be taken care of. She's kind of given the order to everyone. It's like, you need to take care of this guy. He did so much for us, and he's one of the reasons why this effort has gone so well. And aside from that, their whole organization is on lockdown as they try to get this final piece in motion to finally bring down Oni because Ben's effort just didn't quite go as far as they hoped. Which kind of makes sense, because as you recall from, I guess it was the last episode, Ben was trying to monitor to see any ripple effects of what had happened when he hacked in, or when Pharaoh hacked in for him and he did his little testimony. But he really didn't say that much came out of it. He didn't see much on the news channels or any of the chats that were out there. So it makes sense that it didn't quite go as well as they thought, because if the senators were actually out there doing something, he would have heard some news of some kind of scrutiny going on or some kind of investigation into certain things that had happened, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. I did find it weird that there, I mean, granted, he's pretty cut off, but that, as far as we know, nothing has been, you think at least some sort of committee would have been, you know, put together beyond the Senate hearing that we had a couple episodes ago.
So it depends on how manipulative Oni was, I think, after Ben did his hack, because they could obviously justify that this guy was a lunatic and crazy and he had no idea what he was talking about. So I'd assume that that was probably part of their persuasion to the senators of why this might not be as much of an issue, and that some of the stuff that he was testifying to was readily explained in one viewpoint where this actually happened and we have footage to back this up, yada, yada, yada. Going to people that can forge that stuff. Right.
God, no, senators love a clean explanation rather than a dirty committee or Senate hearings.
Well, as far as they know, Oni could be completely BSing on what they have to say, which is likely they are. And oh, yeah. For all the stuff,
I'm just saying,
they,
like, you know, reflecting from real world politicians, they like the clean story as opposed to the dirty, messy one. So I'm sure they would jump at, you know, the chance to take the clean story.
Right. There's a lot of cleaning up or make it look shiny for the senators. And I'm sure for people that maybe would have been like Ben, where they would go and alter some of the actual facts, they probably did some editing of footage and other evidence that would convince the senators of their side of the story. Because you would have to think, in 2558, the technology is there to fabricate just about anything, unless you have a well-trained eye or AI that's looking and digging through stuff.
Yeah.
At that point, you really don't know.
Yep. Longer, better technology gets, the easier it gets to fake information.
Right. So Pharaoh was telling Ben that there was this big plan that needed to be executed, and she was going dark. Her whole team was going to make this one last-ditch effort, and Ben was like, no, there's got to be something else. And Pharaoh comes out and says, it doesn't matter. I'm willing to die for this cause at this point, which is nobling at that point, to believe in something that much that you're willing to die for, and that she appreciates everything that Ben did for her to put this objective into something that is actually possible of being accomplished and bringing Oni to justice. Because if we look at the details, you do see Oni as kind of this evil organization when it comes to, or when it pertains to the well-being of all of humanity, not just the inner colonies or its own power structure.
Yeah.
I assume that with whatever organization she's with, there's been a well-founded reason for bringing Oni down, or at least it seems that way. I can understand where, Godzilla, you were saying there is probably some alternative agenda that she has, but just the way she genuinely sounded in this kind of makes it seem like this is a shared opinion amongst many people that they're willing to die and willing to make this right for the betterment of all humanity, not just the outer colonies for some random vendetta. At least that's what it speaks to me.
Well, yeah, I have no doubt that she actually cares about Ben and, you know, the people that follow her. It's what I'm looking at is what sparked it. You know, what made her choose this path? You know, there's a reason there. And most people, it's, you know, most people just don't want to get involved. What happened to her to make her want to get involved? That's really what it's hard for me to put in words.
No, it's I get what you're saying.
You know, like, what's really driving her?
Because something would have had to if she's not only is she fervent in her beliefs, but to the point where she's willing to kill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like it really, like, I want to know her motivations to be doing all the stuff that she's been doing. The fact that she murdered two Oni operatives, did like that's, yeah. Like killing anybody is kind of, yeah, you got motives beyond what we're thinking. I mean, like, well, Grant, I mean, look, you got to look at what she's been doing too. The amount of stuff she's been putting out there. Like, it also makes me wonder if it is her alone. Like, I know she's with the group, but it makes me wonder who else is also putting this out there besides her.
Mm.
Like, helping her along.
Yeah, yeah.
She seems like the person that's in one of the heads of the group, basically.
Yeah.
So take that whole room of the 12 senators that was in there. She's probably one of those higher up people that's in this bigger group behind this effort. That's kind of my interpretation of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. She's definitely one of the higher, one of the, probably like, you know, like a lead, one of the leaders or a lieutenant under the top leader, whoever, you know, high, definitely high up there to make all of this happen as she has.
Right. She may be the head honcho in this thing too.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
The fact that she was the one that did the hack and she is the one, I mean, because it, I think it really says something that she's been the one that's been in contact with him. She's been trying to push, and she's been the one that's been leaking all this info. If she's the one doing all the heavy lifting, it probably makes sense that she is the main person. That's
especially, yeah, when you think about the pull she must have to be able to get Ben, like all these funds and access to these safe houses and whatnot.
Yeah, and most definitely.
Basically saying that you need to, if he goes to a safe house, that they need to treat him with the best hospitality because of everything that he's done. That just kind of brings out a nobling character, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is so awesome. So moving on from that point on, Ben was like, there's got to be another way. And then he remembers this lead that Petra had. Maybe there's something there that he could use against Oni. So he convinces he convinces Pharaoh to hold off on her plan for a couple of days while he investigates this lead that he's been given. After a lot of contemplating and after a lot of convincing, Pharaoh agrees, and then he heads off to the freighter that he was supposed to catch to go to Bliss. Once he gets there, he gets to go through the Office of Mineral Rights on Bliss and going up, having to spend 75,000 credits of this bank account that Pharaoh's just graciously given him.
For context, he was getting paid 120,000 credits for his job with Oni, you know, or that's what they had offered him at the start of that. just right. as a way of like really contextualizing that huge amount.
And then he just spent over half of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I wish I had a backer that had that kind of money.
Yeah, right.
Right? Be nice.
It would be nice to know how credits really kind of transfer into real world currency. Maybe that's something that we can ask Grim.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty much based on the dollar, because you see, like, back during Reach, and this was somewhat of a joke, but I think it's a good way to measure the credit. Moa burgers were 7.77 credits.
Depending on where you are, that's an expensive burger.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what kind of burger you're getting, but, you right. know, if it's like the equivalent of Future Five Guys, I'd pay $7.77 for that.
Get a Moa burger. Those are better.
Yeah.
Greasy burgers. Those Five Guy burgers.
Yep. These days, they probably go for something like 1,000 credits. Moa's being nearly extinct and all that.
$1,000 burger? Oh, no.
Well, the Moa is almost extinct. One of the cannon fodders a while back talked about that. Like, the only population exists on this, like, petting zoo on some other planet. I can't remember the details. So, it used to be this fun thing, and the guy used to sell Moa nuggets. Now he just has this petting zoo with the last Moa in the galaxy.
Aw, that's horrible.
Aw, that's horrible. And he got like the last, you know, like the last shipment right before Reach fell, and it's like, well, I'm not turning you guys into nuggets.
They look like ostriches. They probably don't taste that different.
Yeah, probably not.
Have you had ostrich? Or no, I take that back. Have you had emu? Emu's amazing. You probably want tender. It's like very gamier tasting chicken. Very good.
I have had neither.
Somebody like here is cultured. Buffalo's good.
Like Buffalo's Wild Wings, does that count?
Of course, I couldn't eat it after. Although I couldn't eat it after visiting the Buffalo Ranch.
Hmm. Too much reality with the livestock.
No, I saw how they lived.
That might do it.
Of course.
Don't give me. It wasn't. They weren't mistreating the animals or anything. It's just the way it's. I don't know. It turned me off. Of course, I was a kid at the time, so this was a Boy Scout trip. So you got to keep that in context.
Gotcha.
But it was quite the trip.
Cool.
Buffalo and Longhorn all in the same field.
Interesting. Now I'm hungry. Thank you for that.
We're talking about Moas and Bert. Freaking Buffalo.
I'm seriously hungry now. I really am.
I can make you even more hungry, but we need to get back on the topic.
Yeah, let's focus on for now, and you can bribe me with food afterwards. When he goes up to the Office of Mineral Rights, he's talking about, or I guess he puts on, do you remember what he said he was acting as?
It's like a...
like some kind of prospector for some mineral?
Yeah, he's like a entrepreneur, essentially. I don't remember the exact words right now, but
yeah.
I think he did actually use entrepreneur at some point, but he's like supposed to be someone who's looking to open a mine on Bliss, and that was his excuse to head out into the Glasslands.
Right. Yeah, he's looking for a place to open a silica mine.
Yeah.
There you go. Thank you. Someone did their homework.
Or they just pay attention.
That too. I only listened to the podcast 3 times before tonight, so it's been a busy week. Well, we launched the fundraiser, so that's been that took a while.
That would eat up a lot of time.
It definitely did. So going off on this basically prospecting journey to have this mine, you could hear in the background the guy that he was talking to convince him, like, well, we have these mines, and he's like, nope, I'm good. I've got my location where I picked out, so that's where I'm going. And the 75,000 credits wasn't just to get him access, but he got full gear, nav equipment, everything that he would need going out there. And one of the things that the person that he talked to warned him about was that beyond the periphery, beyond where they did their own mining, he's on his own. Like, when Ben went out there, he said that once he crossed that, you could see the glass planet, how it was. And that all the mining seemed to immediately stop at the edge of it.
Yeah. It was interesting that, like, this planet, more than any other planet we've seen so far, like even Kolo from The Return was, this one sounded much more like a planet whose surface had been turned to glass. Yeah, the prospector was saying you could cut your foot open on the land out there. He's talking about the glass storms that can cut through and shred you to pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's probably the closest I think to like those glass planets that we first read about, you know, what was it, 14 years ago now, and when Fall of Reach first came out. Like, that really reminded me of some of Eric Nyland's descriptions of, you know, or what I had imagined those planets would be like after being glassed.
Right. And to actually get some more detail behind that, because all we've really heard about is, oh, we've glassed this planet. We've never heard what life is like on a glass planet. And this is the first time we've really dove into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would honestly really like to see what that's like. I'm a huge, like, nature rock type guy. Like, I like all that different type of stuff. The thing that I can honestly relate to the most is where lightning struck on the beach and turned that spot of sand to glass. Like, that's what I kind of get. Like, that's kind of the idea that I'm getting from that. But it'd be interesting to see what it would look like.
Yeah. And Bliss definitely provides a very interesting parallel, because Bliss and Biko, this other, you know, the other planet where that embassy stuff went down, that was they were both glassed in 2526. And so where you have a silica mine on Bliss, Biko has, you know, it's important enough to host peace talks. It's very interesting parallel, you know, very interesting looking at these two planets that, you know, more or less had this identical start at, you know, from 2526 going forward and where they've ended up now.
Well, take a look at the last cutscene in Reach. Just because a planet gets glassed and is barren doesn't mean that there may not be a chance for nature to recover.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just saying, though, it's still interesting because you have these two planets that were glassed in at, you know, in the same year, and it's interesting to see how they've recovered in such different ways. You know,
that's true.
Listen. That's all I mean there.
Then the irony of Bliss on a glass barren planet.
Yeah. I'm going to Bliss. That sounds nice. No, it's really not.
No, not really.
It's not nice.
Like, the name is so off. like there needs to be another name that replaces it, like like horrible or something. I don't know. Something about like Bliss. This sounds like a paradise. It doesn't sound anything like a glass planet.
Not what we were expecting, for sure.
No.
Right. After he gets beyond the periphery, he kind of runs into this dense cloud with it's just building up, and he has having to put on his respirator just to breathe. And even with the respirator, he was having a hard time breathing through all the soot that he was walking through. And at one point when you looked at his nav, you saw that he had 1,200 feet to go left, and it just cleared up all of a sudden. It was just kind of, there was no more musk. It was all clear. He actually saw, and it was somewhat beautiful to him. But then he heard a slight or a low rumble, which was the storm alarms. And he looked all around. And he's like, I don't see anything. And then he looked forward straight ahead of him, and what he thought were mountains was actually a dense dark cloud of flying glass. So he was freaking out a little bit, and he made a mad dash for the waypoint that he had for the coordinates that he was supposed to go to. Didn't have much time left. He found a collapsed section under the glass shards in the glass land space there, and he pounded at it a few times, and he gave one last shove, and he kind of rolled and slid his way in just before the cloud of glass consumed what was overhead. At that point, he went for his med kit because he had some glass cuts that stung a little bit, kind of burned, but he was all good. He wasn't like in critical condition or anything, so he was all set. And he walked around a little bit, and he ended up finding and this was actually a picture that was posted on the Hunter Truth website, but turns out he found an old Oni subspace relay. Just out in the middle of a glass planet.
This is chilling. It kind of reminds me of like a beacon you would find like in Halo. Like if you're like playing like a mission, it'd be like a, what is it called? Kind of like an ODST. Kind of just chilling like underneath all that stuff. not all the, what is it? What do they call it? The glass? That's what they call it, right? That's the term for it.
I'm not sure where you're getting at.
The, like, where he had a break. Well, we're getting a little far ahead, but he found the research station underneath all this stuff, all the glass. Like, that's what it's called.
You mean the surface?
It was a relay station is what he found.
Okay.
He found an old Oni relay station.
Yep. Right. So, okay, I'm just going to let you continue because I'm kind of lost at the moment.
So, basically, under the glass layer, or the, what was considered kind of the glass land, there was this, that motorcycle go by.
Wow.
That's the one bad side of living on this side of the house. Listen to all of those. You get some sound dampening stuff anyways. Underneath the glass level or layer of the ground, there was this Oni facility, and it went down far enough to where when it got glassed, the bulk of the facility actually wasn't touched. It was just the surface layer that took the hit. So everything else below that first or that first level underground was fine. So he walked around, he was looking for warning signs of don't go here, or just things that would normally people shouldn't stay or should stay out of, not even go into. And at one point he found aftermarket munitions, and he was like, I hope I didn't find just a place for Oni contraband. That would be a fruitless effort. There was nothing that he could really use there. Right. But then out of the corner of his eye, through a glass door, he saw this blinking light. In his mind, he's like, is this really what I think it is? It's an active relay that Oni is maybe assumed was glass, but actually is still up and active.
Wouldn't they be able to see that, though? If it was up and active, wouldn't they be able to see some sort of signal from it?
I would think so.
Well, maybe they normally can. Remember, there's this... Ben supposedly only has this 72-hour... window, and I'm sure there's a pretty good reason for that,
and right?
Perhaps this is the one time, you know, this one time, perhaps due to that glass storm specifically, that Oni can't monitor it.
Petra did say someone risked their lives and died to make this window happen. So I'm guessing maybe someone was there just to hold that spot down, just to keep monitoring it. Maybe someone was left over there, and someone found. I guess it would be someone else other than Pharaoh's team, because Pharaoh had no idea of this lead. So someone made this window happen for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe luring out whoever was there to abandon the place and just leave it completely unguarded. Or it was something that the person died just trying to figure out that, yes, this is a place that still exists, and this is something that someone could really use in an effort to fight against Oni.
Yeah. I'd probably go with the second just because, like, going out there, as we saw with Ben, is risky in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And given the facility sounded like it had been very long since abandoned, so I'm guessing the risking their life part was just, discovering that it existed.
Right. That's a little more info that maybe we can get out of Grimm at E3 if he's there. There's a lot of little tidbits in here. It's like, well, we think this could happen, but what actually happened here?
Yeah, right.
What's the actual story on it?
It's not anything groundbreaking, but it's one of those things that it'd be nice to know this little detail of how this actually went down. One of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
After seeing the blinking light, Ben is quite curious, so he hooks up his data pad. Lights come on in the room. All the servers and equipment starts to light up. And for all he knows, he has full access to whatever this relay has access to, which he assumes is just completely everything Oni has. So he starts doing these queries, and he finds the footage that Ray was talking about of the case on Biko with the chief. He found the original footage that got leaked out onto the open network, onto Cheddarnet, and then he found the second video that Ray had mentioned was there that corroborated Chief's story, and he found all the angles of what happened during Chief's Ray the second time on Biko, or the second set of clips. And it turns out that again, everyone Chief had killed was either a terrorist or part of the Sapien Sunrise movement. And he didn't see any innocent civilians get killed.
At least not by the Chief.
Right.
Any kills or any innocent blood spilled was spilled by Sapien Sunrise.
Right. Everything that Ben saw was it was exactly as Ray described it to him. All this footage, everything that was there that would prove the Chief's innocence was there. So he grabbed those files. Then he did a search for the request for Sikibo requesting assistance from the central government. And then the auto reply that the UEG put out to him that declined his request. He pulled that down. And then he did a search for himself and found some pretty disturbing stuff.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's kind of like finding your name in the obituaries.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be a freaky...
Trying to remember the guy's first name. The guy who started the Nobel Peace Prize. Something Nobel. See, he had that. That's exactly what he went through.
Ben found psychological profiles, pressure point analysis, friends, and other things pertaining to him about him being chosen to do this story. Meetings with between Sully and other Oni people, going through his past record in excruciating detail. He found records of those, and while he couldn't bring himself to view them all at the time, he pulled those down. And then he had a very dark idea. He did a search for all the interviewees that he had lined up for him by Oni. Turns out, for Gabrielle Dvorak, she wasn't anywhere near where Chief would have been. She was on Dvorka, completely opposite side of human-occupied space for where John was.
Which, interestingly, I hadn't realized this when I listened, but somebody, Halopedia pointed it out when I was doing some research for my own breakdown. Dvorka, one of the calls that Ben received that you can still listen to on SoundCloud, one of the people that had called in said that that story that Thomas Wu sound, that sounds exactly like what happened to, you know, somebody I knew on, you know, on Dvorka.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, because I know we're going to come up to Thomas Wu here in a second. It would seem that Thomas Wu was appropriating his story. It was telling his story of Dvorka.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And the reason that he did his part for Oni is that they promised him to fund memorials and awareness campaigns for those who suffered the insurrectionist camps.
Yep. Which is probably one of the more noble reasons somebody decided to lie on this list.
Granted, yes, but still, it's...
I'm not excusing him. Yeah, don't get me wrong.
Right, right.
Of the reasons to lie, that's one of the better ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of personal profit.
Right. And it kind of bit him in the butt afterwards, too. Because that was one of the things that pushed Ben over the edge. It's like, wait, you're being paid to lie?
Yeah, that's...
That was all the way back in episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh. And then he found details behind the actor of Jacob Walker, which I didn't write down his actual name. Did either Godzilla or Ian, did one of you two get that?
I think it was
it was Paul something. I don't remember the last name was.
Yeah.
But they found right. They found his acting career and all that stuff. And then he found files of the person that played Dion Govender, his rehearsals, making it to where he was convincing.
Oh, man. Like, if I were in that situation, I found everything that you were doing was basically a lie, and finding out all these things that you were basically talking, thinking that these people were sincere with you about, and found that it was rehearsed, that would piss me off. Like, I'm sorry. Like, that would drive me nuts to no end.
I think it would drive a lot of people crazy. Just to know that this was all set up for me to buy a lie. That just doesn't sound right.
No.
Granted, it's Oni, so they'll stoop to no low end to do whatever they want.
I will say this, though. We say, you know, you say, like, it's low what they did, but at the same time, their original intent was to make the Chief, you know, seem like a positive figure. they weren't necessarily out to harm anyone specifically, just, you know, I mean, kind of, you know, kind of came down to covering their own asses, mind you, but still there was the, you know, this goal of making the chief, you know, sound like, you know, more than just a guy in a suit.
Right. But we're kind of getting that in a weird way now, where, and Pharaoh made the point of this, the chief will be vindicated eventually. Everyone that knows who he's the true hero knows that he is the hero, and he's just taking the fall for it now. And if you think about it, Chief is out there for the betterment of humanity as a whole. And I don't think something like this is necessarily going to faze him or anything he's doing.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying. Yeah, it was like I said. Ultimately, it does come down to only covering their own butts.
Right.
It also helps to, you know, answer some uncomfortable questions about the chief.
There you go.
And, you know, give him some positive PR, which no matter how good, you know, how big of a hero you are, positive PR, you know, you can't undersell PR.
Mm-hmm. Right. After doing the search for the Dion Govender rehearsals, like he did the rehearsals on all his interviews, he went a step further. He did a search for the Spartan program. And he found all the qualifications and all of the program details dating back to 2516 when it was originally there. All the genetic requirements to fulfill the augmentations that would need to take place. Seeing that the recommended age was 6 or younger. And a bunch of other requirements for this program to take place. And seeing that, seeing the progress that they go through, basically being like these... or being referred to and documented in such a way that it was just these high-tech equipment things that they were building, like prototypes. That was the word he used.
Yeah, it reminds me of that line Halsey delivered to that mysterious interrogator. I can't remember the exact line, but it was like, "Your mistake is seeing the Spartans as weapons or tools or something."
As equipment.
Right,
and they made reference to that with Ben as well. How the people that were heading the program saw the Spartans, these children, as equipment.
Yep,
right,
but not Halsey, but she's the evil one.
So well, that's a whole nother debate.
I know. I couldn't help but making the quick jab there.
I mean,
that's something that'd be good to talk about, though.
It was her idea to use children.
Oh yeah.
So
she came up with all the parameters of the Spartan 2 program. Absolutely. And that is definitely on her.
I mean, a lot of people.
Or is it on the librarian?
No.
Oh, come on.
Oh. I know where you're going with that. And I won't deny that that a gay guy probably guided Halsey down a certain path. But I kind of like to believe that Halsey mostly came up with that on her own.
I was hoping at least I'd convince you. Dang it!
Sorry,
it was a good attempt, right?
Yeah, I'm just not a big fan of the idea that somebody gets led down a path because of genetic programming or fate or whatever, you know, whatever it is within a story.
Yeah, the way I look at that is it's not genetic programming. It's she gave Dr. Halsey the disposition to follow that path.
Yeah. Which I could definitely agree on. It's like, because most of the time when I see that brought up, and I'm not necessarily implying this of you, Dusty, just that, you know, most of the time it seems to be brought up by people when they're trying to vindicate Halsey of all wrongdoing. Again, not accusing you of doing that in this case, but so that's one reason I don't really like it. the way Todd put it is, I think, absolutely perfect.
She's definitely not innocent of all wrongdoing, but most of the stuff was pretty much Oni. And she did care for the Spartans, and she did...
That was my ultimate. Yeah.
She did care for the Spartans, but the Oni the way I see it is Oni were the facilitators to the program. Yeah, they didn't say no, but they, you know, they gave her the means to create the Spartans. You know, the whole idea of using children for this program which is the biggest thing in the program that's, you know, unethical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, aside from the clones, which was also Dr. Halsey, it's, you know, that's why I'm not so quick to give Halsey a get out of jail free card.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's like, I like her as a character, but as a person, she has definitely done some stuff that I would call morally evil.
Mm-hmm.
Put it like fair this. Point. I put it like this, though. I mean, even though she's done stuff like that, it's, we've seen worse done, honestly. Like, her, like, I put it like this, we've said this before, but, like, her heart was more in the right place of thinking that stealing the kids were, that was wrong in itself, but the fact that she was trying to replace them with clones instead of them just going completely missing and the parents and the, like, families wondering where everybody went. Like, I understand that.
Yeah, like, I agree with that. I thought that was actually a good thing, you know, not what Perangoski was saying. Like, oh, just let them wallow in their sorrow. Not in those words, obviously. But
oh, is that accent?
That was my bad guy accent. Let them wallow in their sorrow.
Gotcha. Nice. The thing with that, and I don't know if this was explained somewhere, I think it was, but it was that she had, I think it was actually in Fall of Reach, because it was from her perspective, but she had compassion for the families of having to go through just completely having their child lost, which is why she came up with the idea of the clones. So she wasn't completely heartless, and while some of the stuff that she did was maybe considered immoral, I think there's a lot of other things that we've seen in the Halo universe, especially from Oni.
Yeah.
That's a lot worse than what Halsey did.
Yeah. And I've always argued it's like it's the worst thing for a parent, or the one thing worse for a parent than having to watch their child die is to not know what happened to their child.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
And that's a very common theme in a lot of like TV shows and movies. Like, I just want to know what happened. Even if it's the worst thing possible, at least I know.
Because it's more of an ease of mind knowing that, okay, my kid died from a unknowable disease versus my kid was actually kidnapped.
And now
my kid died from a disease that my family has no history of.
Yeah, right?
You know, there's good and bad sides to that, and we could debate this for hours.
Yes, we could.
But the point is Oni with Dr. Halsey did a very bad thing, and Ben is bringing this to light.
Yeah.
And he's seeing the documentation for what they did to these kids. And I don't know that I could read it.
Yeah. Like, when you think about that, like, we've had a we have a very unique perspective as fans. And I think a lot of people forget that. You know, we get the way we get this bird's eye view. Being a person in that universe, I could almost equate that to like the American soldiers in World War II finding those concentration camps for the first time. It's like you think you know everything, and then all of a sudden, there's just whole deeper layer of shit. You know, pardon my French, that you didn't even think about, and it's like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't obviously equate those aren't perfect parallels, obviously, for anyone who's going to get on my ass for comparing Halsey to a Nazi again. But it's like that's like the closest parallel I can think of. Just how would you stomach that?
As far as you know, what has come to you know what has happened in our world, it's a pretty relevant comparison.
Yeah,
you know. The human atrocities committed in World War II in the war camps, you know, there's not a lot that can compare to it because it was absolutely awful. But to take 75 children, replace them with clones that you know are not going to live, are not going to live for very long, you know, which book was it? One of the Karen Traffic's books where Perangoski is interviewing, well, I guess it's the closest thing you could say is interviewing Halsey, and she asks, why the clones? You know, and she's like, well, if you thought the clones were going to live, why not use the clones for the Spartan program?
I think that was Thursday War, because that was the,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, that was the book. I think that was,
or was it the first book?
That was the end of Glasslands, right after they got out of Trevelyan, which I know I butchered that name again.
Trevelyan.
Trevelyan. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure I didn't say it right either, but that's as close as I can get to it.
Yours was definitely closer. I know that for a fact, because I know Trevelyan got me into a lot of trouble with some of my subscribers.
I think Trevelyan is the common white guy saying of it.
Well, the good thing about audiobooks is that you get an official pronunciation on some of these.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know, it's nice because some of the stuff, there is no way, if I was reading a book, I'd figure out how to pronounce some of the names they use. It's like, really? Did you just like make this up last week or what? You know, some of it's based in, you know, actual English.
Yeah.
But, you know,
and you get stuff like Ipren Ibrakushma from Primordial.
Oh, yeah.
It's like baby gibberish that like 5-year-olds will put out, or well, not even like 3-year-olds. It'd be like screaming out random words. Oh, that's the name of a city.
Yeah.
There you go.
Hodgepodge of Latin and Greek.
Yeah, right?
I mean, I know that, you know, they try to base it in as much as they can into, you know, the base language of, you know, the universe, but it just, geez, some of the stuff they come up with.
Yeah.
It's like school teachers. Every one of my school teachers had the weirdest frickin' names.
Oh, I know.
I think it's a pre-qualification that to be a school teacher, you have to have a weird name.
I've had some pretty standard ones, pretty normal ones.
I haven't.
Well, one teacher's name. She was an awesome teacher, but Miss Vesvetsa? Vesvetsa. Vesvetsa. I don't even know how to say it. Like, I don't even know if it's Russian or what, but like, no one could ever pronounce her name in fourth grade at all.
I had a math teacher. His name was Fricky.
Fricky? Sounds like what?
I can't Fricky. Even remember any of my teachers' names.
Well, you know, some of them I just can't forget.
Let's get freaky.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You know, oh, my God.
It's like, really? But anyway, back to the podcast.
Yeah.
There you go. The last thing that Ben searches for after searching through all the Spartan program is John 117. He finds all these records about him being in the Spartan program and all that stuff. And he suddenly gets flooded with corrupted files. Doesn't know what happened. He immediately disconnects, checks that everything he pulled down was safe, and he's good. And as he disconnected, everything powered down. He first thought that he may have gone over the time window, or Oni had figured out that he was there. He checked that he was still within the time window. He was all good. But other than that, he didn't really know what was going on. But the little standby light that he noticed earlier was now glowing brighter and pulsing. At that point, though, he wanted to get out. He had all the stuff, and he felt confident that he had all the information that he needed to finally bring Oni down.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He got the pieces that he needed to corroborate Chief's story, and it sounds like a lot of information that he needed to help solidify the info that he brought before the senators during that hack. And maybe Pharaoh can use that to push it back out to them. Maybe hack into some other point and get that info out there. And I think that's what we're going to see with the next episode.
They're going to hack E3. Oh.
We said that, right? I think that would be awesome. I think that would be so cool if that happened.
I think it would definitely be cool. The only issue I foresee is that, you know, it's the Microsoft conference, you know, press conference, not necessarily the Halo press conference, but yeah, given that, yeah, Halo's a first part is, you know, the cat still, it's still the killer.
I mean, they've already hacked, you know, done it with an Xbox commercial.
Yeah.
An Xbox game commercial.
Yeah. But those were exclusively through YouTube, weren't they?
No.
No, they're on TV.
I missed that.
The Ford one commercials
was on movie theaters.
Yeah, the original commercial that they chopped up was originally on TV.
Oh, yeah, but
version was only on YouTube.
Yes, yeah.
But the Ford commercial, the one that had the little hacked in things, that was shown in movie theaters. Because I know a few people said that when they went to go see Age of Ultron, that showed up as one of the previews.
Yeah. I'm still a little skeptical, but I would definitely be on board if that happened. If nothing else, I could definitely see, like, if not at the press conference, it might happen as like a side event, like through Waypoint or something.
I'll put $10 on that happening in the press conference.
Yeah, like, I'm not confident enough to bet.
Yeah,
I've got a $10 Xbox Live card right here.
No, like, that's going to happen, and I'm going to be sitting next to Dust, and Dust is just going to be screaming, "It happened! It happened!"
Is there no, I'm just going to look over to you with this giant smirk on my face.
Just keep, like, looking back at the screen.
Imagine what my reaction is going to be. People in the store are going to be looking at me like I'm nuts.
You're going to be like, "He was right." And he's like, "What the hell are you talking about?"
Dude,
I was right. That's what I'm talking about. What does that mean?
You go to store clerk or manager or whatever. Your like employee may be on bath salts. Like, he's just going off about how he was right and just going absolutely nuts. Like, I'm going on.
One of the perks about being basically the manager.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah, that works.
and I will also happen to be the only employee that will be there that day. So,
well, that's even better.
Gotcha.
Well, that can go both ways.
Of course, they may actually call the store owner and say, "You may want to have somebody come check out this guy.
Check for mental problems." So that wraps up episode 11 of Hunt the Truth. We have one more episode. And do you know anything specifically that we're supposed to be getting like a double feature for next week?
I've only heard it from other people who said they've heard it from other people.
Okay. I've only seen rumors of it. I haven't seen anything firm saying that.
Yeah. Like, I heard, like, the earliest I can remember was somebody saying, "Wouldn't it be cool if we got a double feature?" And I wouldn't be surprised if that just had, given the
cascade effect.
Yeah, it's like, and that just became, we are going to get it eventually, as people play telephone across the internet.
That's what it seemed like to me. It didn't seem there was any official announcement saying that it was going to be a double feature.
I could definitely see it being like a longer episode, because that'd be a great way to wrap up the series. Like, here's a half hour episode or a 45 minute episode. Might as well be two.
Agreed. I think we'll definitely see something like that.
If they only have like a 15 minute episode and make that like that's the ending of it, I would be rather disappointed.
I think everybody would. No matter what, episode 12 is going to be the longest episode to date.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
Even if it's only by a second, longest one was 221 to now, and this one's 222. But yeah, or 2022.
I enjoy the length of the episodes. They're not too short, but they're not super long.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they're
right there in that sweet spot.
Unlike ours, which are an hour and a half long.
Yeah, but ours are a lot more fun.
Oh yeah,
I don't know. These are pretty juicy.
Juicy.
Okay, so get your head out of the gutter.
Like tackle people juicy and fruit. Like bring guns and start shooting people or something to make it interesting.
Well, figuring that we're not actually telling an official story, I think we can stand down from having to use any actual weapons.
Oh, well, that's not fun. Oh,
but I got my kukri ready.
No weapons.
I would prefer not, but that's just me.
Yeah, we'll save that for RTX.
Okay.
That doesn't sound very... very
I may be reconsidering on this party idea. Call the cops. I got some suspects.
I'm not exactly
over
sure
here.
I want to share a condo with you guys now.
Anywho, that's going to wrap it up for this fine episode of Podtacular. Again, Toa Freak, thank you very much for being on the show. We hope that you can join us for our final episode of Hunt the Truth coverage.
I certainly plan to.
Good.
Yes.
Good.
Let the halo flow through you.
Oh gosh, now we're doing a Star Wars crossover.
Boy.
Of course.
Too much.
It's sci-fi. It always comes back to Star Wars.
Abort. Well.
Just like fantasy always comes back to Star... Yeah.
I'd rather go Star Wars.
I'm a Trekkie.
Engage.
Engage.
TNG Trekkie. So Picard. Yep.
Yeah.
Trekkie
heart. Make it so.
Yep, there you go. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in to our stream for tonight or downloading us via iTunes, Zoom, or any other RSS feed aggregator. We really appreciate the time that you take to download us and listen or come out to our live stream. Remember, we do our shows regularly on Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, although for our next one, we'll actually be doing it at 9. So for those listening in the chat right now on our Twitch stream, we'll be doing it tomorrow at 9 o'clock. We'll be pushing it back just a little bit, but we'll be doing it normally at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We also have one more episode of Hunt the Truth, which we may move that around. I don't know if we're going to do it Wednesday. We may do it Sunday night or Monday. We're going to try to figure that out when the best option is, because Bio and I will be in L.A. for E3. So our schedules are going to be oh so crazy.
Yeah,
best reasons.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking probably Sunday night before you get buried in E3 stuff.
That's what I'm thinking, although I won't get to Eli's place until 8:30 Pacific time.
Yikes, yeah.
Which may be a little late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be around.
I won't be.
Yeah. We don't need you anyway. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that.
Shots fired. Damn.
Yeah. Oh. I am such a gracious guest.
Yeah. Hey,
so much for that next favorite.
Welcome to the family. Wow. But we'll figure out when we're going to do that, and we'll let you guys know via Twitter when that's going to be. We're going to aim for Monday, but we'll let you guys know for sure. We also have our game night coming up on Friday. Mr. Godzilla T will be hosting again. I believe, correct?
Yes.
Awesome. I might be able to catch the tail end of that because I will be playing volleyball with my small group up until probably about 8:30. So I should be able to... Yes. We do that every other week since it's the summer. So I should be able to catch... Should be able to catch the end of it, at least. But
well, I'm
we
glad
have
you
that going
work,
on.
Work is in your schedule.
I know. Just go ahead and just stab the knife all the way in. I know. I'm a horrible, horrible host.
And twist. Right?
Yep. I deserve it. I deserve that one.
Yeah.
Anyways, we do our game nights on the Master Chief Collection on nights where Xbox Live is cooperating. So if you have that, then we would love to see you online. I think we're going to do some, I guess depending on sizes, we could break up and do some ODST campaign runs, or we may just do matchmaking or custom games, depending on what everyone in the lobby wants to do. So please go over and check that out. And again, that will be Friday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure you check out our recently announced Indiegogo campaign. We are wanting to host a party at RTX for our 10-year anniversary. That's right. We've been doing this for almost 10 years as a podcast. So it's a lot to ask for. I know it's $5,000 to help fund us producing our own swag and purchasing or hosting a party at a local venue. So it's something that I think we can come together on. Halo community has been great at supporting fundraisers in the past, and I have faith that we can do it for this one. And that'll be something on the Saturday night during RTX, where we'll get to just come and chat and have good times as Halo fans alike. And if we can get through our initial fundraising goal, then we can buy more swag. We can buy some more Halo merch for us to do for giveaways during live streams, host some tournaments online, all that stuff. And if we even get further, then we can host our own Halo 2 Classic LAN tournament at our party at RTX and even have some cash and Halo merchandise prizes as part of prizes for those who finish in the top spots. If we can get that done, I will be very, very impressed. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Griffball managed to raise $12,000 for their Kickstarter over for their Griffball booth at RTX. And $5,000 is less than half of that. So I feel that the community can pull through with this. So if you haven't already, please go check out the campaign. It's over at poddeckler.com/Indiegogo. That's Indiegogo. and you can go over there. And even if you only donate like $5 or something, every little bit helps to get us towards where we want to be for celebrating at RTX. We'll also be having a panel. We'll be having the founder of PodTackler and the original co-host of the show on the panel and at RTX. So if you have a chance to go, I believe there are still some tickets left. So I would definitely recommend checking it out. It's going to be something you will not want to miss. And if you haven't, please listen to our last episode. We go into a lot more details on what we're going to be doing with the Indiegogo campaign contributions and go into more details of what we're going to be doing at RTX this year. Please check out our podcasting network, thepodcast.com. That is thepodcast.com, which hosts our sister podcasts like Guardian Radio, Critzcast, The Learning Cliff, Work in Progress, and How to Murder Time. Please give those guys a look if you're looking for some other gaming podcasts to listen to, or if you're interested in any of the topics that they cover. Guardian Radio does Destiny, Critzcast does Team Fortress 2, and The Learning Cliff does EVE Online. So please go check those guys out. And again, check out Halo Cannon, aka Toa Freak. Check out his YouTube videos. He does some great analysis videos on Hunt the Truth, the Halo Cannon stuff, and a lot of stuff pertaining to Halo lore that comes out. And I think you did a piece recently on the Game Informer News Dump, which we're actually going to do a podcast on tomorrow. So we'll be talking about in detail. There's lots of info that came out regarding Halo 5 Guardians, which makes me wonder, if we got that much information, how much more information is going to be released at E3? It sounds like a lot.
I think our heads are going to explode.
I'm telling you guys, I'm going to have like a freaking heart attack. I feel like
that might be the case, yeah. There's been some tension on my forehead this morning.
There's been tension on my back for the last 3 months.
Yep.
I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't need it. There you go. Need all the Halos.
Oh, yes.
Yes, please check out Halo Cannon on YouTube, and then he's at Toa_Freak on Twitter. Thanks again, dude, for being on. It's been great chatting with you, and we're looking forward to this last episode of Hunt the Truth.
Yeah,
this is going to be a big one. I can feel it. This is the grand finale. We hit that climax. We hit that climax with the hack, and then we kind of tapered down a little bit, still going strong. I have a feeling we're going to jump right back up there at the end. We're going to have some kind of killer ending that leads into E3.
Oh, yeah.
Chief drops in.
That would be fucking sweet.
Yes, it would.
And yes, I will bleep myself out there.
Jeez.
It's that good, man. That's going to wrap it up for us tonight, though. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. This has been episode 491. We will see you guys either tomorrow for our discussion on the latest Game Informer Halo 5 content, or on our next Hunt the Truth podcast, which will be the grand finale, Benjamin Giroux's search for the truth.